You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Long-Form Conversations podcast from New York City. I'm Jamie Stoller, and I was a guest on the last episode, but today I'm the host, and I am so excited because today's guest is Aaron Jackson. Now, Aaron is an amazing improviser.
Wow.
Yeah. And he is on What I Did for Love and Rumpelteazer, and he's doing a show called We Will Turn You Gay.
That's correct.
Correct. Okay, yeah. Good. I was worried I was going to mess that up. So he's an amazing performer. You've seen him in New York probably if you're around. And we're going to talk about improv.
We're going to talk about improv.
I love it.
Me too.
Great. So, Aaron, why did you start taking improv, or what got you started with improv?
Yes. I was like a theater kid, and in my high school, there was an improv class that was mostly short form, and so I got into it there and then went to a performing arts college called the Boston Conservatory and always knew I was going to do improv, but they didn't have a ton of it there. It was more, you know, just like acting and stuff. But then when I moved to New York, knew I was going to get into it and just started taking classes at UCB. So I think since high school, I didn't know you could get as hardcore into it as I ended up getting, but I knew that that was going to be in my future, in my
future.
Cards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did you do any improv in college?
Not really, just sort of acting exercise-y improv. There was an improv team when I first got there, and I did audition and did not get on my freshman year, and then the guy who ran it, his apartment burned down.
Oh.
Yeah. And so he stopped holding practices, and the team sort of dissolved.
What a story.
And I think I had interest in starting a team, but just I didn't know how to put it together. I didn't feel confident enough to just be like, this is what we're doing and this is how you do improv. So
totally.
I just sort of let it lay fallow.
Yeah.
Really concentrated on the craft of acting.
Which has paid off in your improv.
Oh, in dividends in my improv. Yeah.
So when you moved to New York, did you know about UCB before that?
I did, because I watched the sketch show, but also my sister lives in New York and is 2 years older than I am. And so when I would come visit, we would go see shows because she's hip and knew I was into it. So I had seen improv at UCB before, so I did know about it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And when you saw it, were you immediately like, this is for me?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I saw like Instant Cinema, which Zach Woods and many other great people like Sylvia Ozels and other people were on. And I was like, this is it. And then I saw some shitty shows too, you know, that are the weirder shows.
Yeah.
But sort of dug it, like got the punk kind
totally.
Of vibe
yeah.
and was liked that they were shitty.
Exactly.
You know? But then was blown away by Instant Cinema and other shows like that.
I remember being so impressed. I was like, oh, these are the same cost? Like,
yeah,
you see this and that? And it's like, amazing. They're
totally.
Both cheap. That's crazy.
Yeah. The best is as cheap as the worst.
Yeah, I love that about it. So when you started, like, what teachers or performers were influencing you when you were starting out?
Yeah. I already talked about Zach Woods.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's the best.
Yeah.
And he's, I think, like 1 year older than me, but I didn't know that until I was like deep into classes. And when I found that, I wanted to kill myself.
I remember
so
hearing
good.
he started really young.
Yeah. And I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I mean, but so he started when he was 18 or something.
Yeah.
So I remember that being very discouraging because he was so good and only a year older than me. I thought I just assumed he was 5 years older than me or something.
Uh-huh.
But age is a construct,
age
so
it
doesn't matter. And then I loved Jeff Hiller and still do love Jeff Hiller. Still love Zach Woods too, but Jeff Hiller was like a big influential
He's incredible.
Performer, I think, for me, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now it's cool. You're on the show with him.
He's on Rumpelteazer and We Will
Turn
You
Gay. Yeah.
We get to perform together a lot, which
That's
is
awesome.
Fun.
That's so cool. That's something cool, too, about UCB is, like, if you keep doing it, eventually the people you look up to, you can sort of play with them.
And I got to play with Zach Woods, too, at an ASCAP before, and it was, like, surreal, but then also it's just that's what it is.
That's
you stick around long enough and it's like, oh, you're in the club.
That's awesome. That's so cool.
Yeah.
And when you were starting out, like, what was your feeling in the classes? Were you feeling like I want to be on a Harold team?
Yeah.
Were you feeling like I'm not getting it? Like, what were the things going through your head when you were starting out?
So like I said, I knew I was gonna do comedy just somehow. And and then when I remember taking that, like, first 101 class, I was like, this is it. We found it. Mm-hmm. Like, this is your deal. So I was hooked pretty hard, pretty quick. And I think it's because I was sort of – I had lived in New York for a year and was getting, like, pretty turned off of acting. I would go to auditions and just, like, wait around and just hated it. And then would see the shows and be like, these suck. You know, I don't like these.
Yeah.
So then when I found, like, finally started taking improv classes and was like, oh, my God, I'm so into this. And I would go see the shows and love them. So
yeah.
I was like, oh, that's good. Like, you should like what you're trying to do.
Exactly.
You should, like, want to do it. And so I felt, like, pretty good in the classes, especially up top, just because I'd had so much stage experience. Mm. So it was, like, especially in 101, it's just like, have a good time. And I, like, knew how to do that. So, and then when it got more gamey, it got, that was harder for me. That's not my natural, like, where my brain just lives. But I love that. I loved the whole, like, solving the riddle, like, solving the puzzle of it.
Yeah.
And so even though I was, like, doing poorly, like, still liked it. And was able to, like, have fun on stage still so that it wasn't, like, a miserable experience, which it always is. You know, you always go through that when it's like, the 401 blues or whatever, where you're like, this is not fun anymore. It's so hard. I was still able to, like, have a good time because I was improvising with friends and stuff. But the I liked that, like, Rubik's Cube of it.
Yeah.
Like, there's, like, a secret, and once you figure out secret, that, like, game, I'm using air quotes, game is, like, the secret. Once you kind of crack that, you can kind of do consistently competent scene work.
It's,
you know,
so
it's
interesting.
Like, I know.
Yeah.
Like, even if this scene is not the most inspiring scene of all time, it's like we're playing a premise.
Right. There's, like, a logic to it.
Right.
And you had the acting, which some people have to work on that,
Which I was surprised by in the classes, I remember. Like, people didn't know how to project or, like, turn their backs to the audience. And I'd just been doing plays for so long. I was like, this is insane.
Yeah,
that you
exactly.
Don't know. But it makes sense.
Right.
They're just comedy nerds that never perform.
I remember Brian Foss telling me not to lift up my real shirt.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Cause
he's
I teach
your improv shirt.
The one that's the people will, like, fake. Use improv pants and stuff, but they will always take off their real shoes.
Why? And with the real shoes?
Yeah, always in 101. And you have to say, like, just, you say it multiple times. People, I think because they're just easy to slip on and off.
That's so, so interesting.
People, and you have to, oh, no, improvise your shoes as well.
That's so funny.
They'll get, like, oh, I don't take my top off, but I can take my shoes off.
The shoes are real.
Yeah,
that's so weird. You're like, and then as an audience member, you're like, okay, so then what other parts of his body are?
Yeah, what's real?
What's real?
What's real? What's the fantasy?
That's so funny. Yeah, you teach 101?
Yeah, I've taught all the levels
except
401 because I don't, I'm not into passing or failing people into
advanced
study. That's
I just don't want to do it.
Yeah, I just don't want to do it. So I've taught all the levels.
That must be really interesting to see at each distinct level, like, the common themes that come up.
Yeah.
And in 101, this is a thing I see. In 201,
totally.
This is a thing I see. Even if it's not related to the curriculum, like, their development as
an
advisor.
Yeah, I think there's definitely, I'm hitting the microphone. I think there's definitely patterns that are, oh, this is pretty common for a 101. Oh, now they kind of know that. Here's what's pretty common for a 201.
Yeah.
Three.
Do you have, like, a favorite level to teach?
I like 3.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you teach and learn the Harold structure. And I like that because they know, like, they know the basics.
Right.
They get the formula now, and then it's fun. It's kind of, it's like giving them a new toy to play with. The Harold is a monstrous form and so hard to learn. So it's really funny to be like, try this one.
Yeah.
But I remember being so excited in 301, like, oh my God, we could do group games and, like, try callbacks and make a set. Because that's what improv is like, the sets. It's not like, yes, you can just do a good scene, but you're putting on a show. So this is like, okay, here we're doing a show.
Some structure
around it. Yeah, and like, we get to, like, we're crafting this show together.
Yeah.
So I like 301. You don't have to do the basics, like, Yes, I am a robot, and we're on Mars, which is 101, and then 201's a little heady, because they're a learning game. So 301, they know it. You still have to note them on it all the time, obviously, but it's more fun.
That's great.
They get to play.
Yeah, and then, like, they're probably prouder of their show, because it means something. Yeah, it's like, we did a Herald on stage.
Right, that's what's really cool. Like, it's most people's first Herald, so after that show, even if it bombed, it was like, well, you did a Herald, though. That's cool. Not many people have.
Yeah, exactly.
It's pretty fun.
So when you were going through classes, did you go pretty quickly, or did you take your time?
I flew through. Yeah,
Like,
once I figured out you could get in, you know, like the day after, that's what I would do.
Oh, wow. You would sign up right away?
Yeah. So I didn't know that in 101, so I think I had to wait like 3 or 4 months between my 101 and 201. And then after that, I was like, the next week I was starting the next one.
Awesome.
The next week I was starting.
And then
like,
did you audition? You were hooked. Did you audition right after?
Yeah, I auditioned during what was then called 501, but is now called Advanced Study. Mm-hmm. I auditioned during that and was placed onto a Herald team.
Wow. This was pre-Lloyd.
Pre-Lloyd era. Mm. Pre-Lloyd era. Showing my age.
Oh, my God. You're probably, what, like 22?
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. 22.
22 just now. Just turned during this recording.
Yeah, you're so old. Get out of New York. So when you got onto that team, how did you feel? And what was the name of that team, by the way?
That was Sandino.
Oh, yeah.
And I was very excited, and I just didn't want to be I remember all I was like, I just don't want to be the worst team.
Yeah.
That was my only goal.
Yeah, that's
like,
a good goal.
I just don't want to be the team that everyone's like, we can leave. They suck.
And people love that team. Like,
yeah, that team ended up being great,
which is
pretty fun.
And were you on that team for a year? Or?
That team, I think, was 2.5 years.
Oh, that's a long time.
Yeah. And then it was retired.
Okay.
Retired.
And then where'd you go after that?
And then I was on a team, one of the worst named Herald teams of all time, called Salmon Diane, which is a pun. Yeah, it's a pun on the television program Cheers.
/ Fish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
So I was on that team, and then from that team went to What I Did for Love, which is the team I'm on now.
Got it. Awesome. Yeah. And what form do you guys do on What I Did for Love?
What I Did for Love, the first half is an interview, you know, premise-y, and then the second half is that, whatever it's called, Spokane or whatever, where you do, like, a source scene that you then explore the world and then go back to the source scene.
Got it. Okay.
I don't really know what that's called.
I think that's a Spokane.
Yeah, some people call it The Family Guy.
Oh, okay.
A Delicate Flower. I hate all the names of it.
Yeah, most names are just bad in general.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah.
That's really...
So you've been on a few teams. What openings have you liked the most that you guys have done?
Sandino was organic, you know, and I dug that a lot. Because I don't really love premise-based improv, to be fair. I like organic stuff a lot more. And I don't know why.
Yeah.
I guess I know why. I feel almost like premise-y. It feels almost like cheating.
Mm-hmm.
It almost feels short for me.
You like laid the cards out,
yeah,
and you're like, now we just kind of play what we just
right.
Yeah,
and it definitely, I think the problems you see when you're teaching a lot, is like when people are learning off an opening, is like they feel trapped by that premise. It's like the premise is only there to help you explore.
Right.
But I just like organic more. I like just being, like, truly discovering everything in the moment. So that's why that Herald team was very fun because, you know, sometimes the opening, you'd get a suggestion and it would just sort of be a pretty clean, regular, like, scene painting style opening because we were just organically doing it. But then sometimes it was, like, really fucking weird and fun.
Cool.
And, you know, like, I remember one that was, I guess the suggestion was chess or chessboard, and all the scenes were, like, people moving on a chessboard, and then Anna Rubinova and I were in like a weird, almost like a Spokane. We would like pop in and do this one weird little scene where we were playing each other in chess. And so people used to say like, Sandino doesn't truly do Heralds, but I would argue that we did. It was just like not the like, it wasn't always like that group game, that group game, that it's over. It was like weirder. Like there was this extra scene in there, and then group games would happen when you wanted them to, and then it just was more like thematic.
Yeah, and that requires a lot of trust and being on the same page as a team to
totally.
Be able to pull that off.
Yeah.
To know what the other person's trying to do and
figure
it out.
And trust when it's like, oh, none of us know what we're doing. We just got to ride this wave and trust that we'll get there.
That's really interesting. That's so different than a lot of people's experience. Like mine, you start on Lloyd, and it's really pattern right. game and premise and yes. follow the rules and keep those rails on or stay on the rails, I guess.
Yeah.
And you were just going, right, okay, like, let's just have fun and do,
right.
you know.
And that team started doing, what do you call it, invocation. So it's not mm-hmm. like we just, like, instantly started organic. But still.
That's cool.
The invocations were weird, too. You know? So
yeah.
It was just a team that wanted to do it, too. You can't force. Some teams, it would be horrible to do organic.
Right.
It just wouldn't make sense. That team just wanted to be an organic
That's
team.
That's cool. So everyone was, like, on the same page about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just kind of, it just is what it wanted to be.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's interesting about, I would want to talk about Lloyd. But this is about me, Jamie.
We'll get to that later. Yeah, I do think it is interesting, though. I'm sure people listening to this have heard people talk about Lloyd experience.
Yeah.
And, like, it's probably inconceivable for some people to be like, you just go straight to Harold
I
now.
Know.
Like,
because now
crazy.
That would feel like, oh my God, what a rock star. Like,
yeah,
that
exactly.
just doesn't happen. You don't just get to go straight to Harold.
Exactly.
But that's how it was.
And I'm sure the teaching is probably a little different too. Like, you're teaching sort of with Lloyd in mind and like
yeah,
leading
so.
Them to a pattern game and leading them to specific,
yeah.
you know. But that's just really interesting.
Yeah.
And so when you went to the weekend, what was that mm-hmm. like?
That was fun. And it was actually an easy transition because what I did for Love had been when the Beast was new.
Uh-huh.
They were just trying to fill that fucker up with shows because they didn't know what to do. So what I did for Love was just a show that was like, I think 7:30 on Friday nights or something. And then we ended up winning the cage match. We won cage match, baby. And Nate Dern was on the team. And so he was like, let's just make this a weekend team.
Because oh,
they didn't have weekend teams at the Beast. Or maybe Airwolf was the only weekend team
okay.
at the Beast. So he added another one. It's like, now there's two weekend teams at
oh,
the Beast.
Wow.
So it wasn't like, oh, wow, I'm on the weekend. I mean, I was super excited, but we'd already been performing as a team together at the Beast a lot.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
Okay. And you guys, it's like, it's so different because weekend teams don't have to practice.
Correct.
So that's a whole different way of being on a team.
A different lifestyle.
It's a different lifestyle. Like, you don't have coaches.
Yeah, right.
Which is
yeah.
so interesting, the transition from being on Herald and, like, getting notes, and then all of a sudden you're,
right.
you know,
it's,
you're, a rock star.
Yeah, you're free.
You're free.
I think, I was on the touring company
oh, right.
for a long time. So you don't get notes after that because you're just, it's just you out on the road with your
yeah.
friends. So I was used to just, like, I guess self-policing. I don't know.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I while I do think notes after shows are good, that's why I think UCB is good, is it cares about its programming and is trying to make it better. I also think it can be creatively stifling.
Yeah,
just to like,
yeah.
oh, now we got to go get our wrist slapped for doing, you know, like doing a bad improv show. And why I always hated it, I always had good coaches who were, you know, so it was never like, this sucks. But it's like, I knew when the show was bad.
That's the thing.
I wasn't like,
yeah.
oh, whoa, I thought we fucking slayed. Like, I'm not an idiot. Like, it was
right.
like, yeah, that show sucked. I get it. I get why.
Yeah. And
so I didn't need to just sit there and be told for 20 minutes.
Oh, no.
Felt very, like, bad boy.
Right. You know? And I feel like a good coach usually will just be like, well,
yeah.
you know, I hope you had fun. But,
yeah.
They don't really note you on when you're sad.
Yeah. It's just silly. It's a silly thing to do.
Do you remember when you were coming up, like, some seminal like moments of success or failure or even on Herald Night where you were like, oh, that didn't work, or like, yeah, that really worked.
Yeah.
I have to do that again.
I remember in 401 taught by Kevin Hines, my 401, like fully getting game.
Oh, wow.
Which I got it, obviously, but I remember that to me was the first time I felt like I could consistently play game, not always, but was like, I know the game of this scene and I'm playing it and like I can come up with moves for it, was in my 401. So I remember that being like an aha moment, I guess, mm-hmm. to quote
Oprah Winfrey
of Harpo Studios.
Of Harpo, in case you're not familiar. Yeah.
She is a talk show host and an icon. But yeah, so I remember that sort of clicking, like, I get game.
Yeah.
And then on stage, I was very, I got on quick, I'd say. I was placed on a team young in my improv journey. And so I was shy. I was a little bit reserved. And that team, Sandino, was so good that it just, like, made me much better. And they were all none of them were as green as I was. So I think they just sort of like made me get better faster. And I remember after being on that team for about, I don't know, I'd say like 9 months, I was like, oh, I feel comfortable on this stage now. And I feel like I don't feel lesser than them.
Yeah.
They never made me feel lesser, but just, and I was like, I would have to force myself, like, go initiate one of the key first scenes.
Yeah.
You know, don't just initiate a group game that somebody could, like, take over from you. Not that, you know, it's a group game, but, you know, like, initiate a scene where you will be in the two-person scene. I had to force myself. And then after a while, it was like, now I'm good.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I had a similar experience, which I was discussing last pod, but it was like, some people get it when they're on stage because they're put on a little earlier than they're like not ripe yet. And
you just
have to push yourself versus people who have been in classes for a long time and like maybe they're really ready when they get on. Either way, it'll work out. But just like forcing yourself at some point to be like, okay, just do one thing or like try this.
Right.
And having a team that's supportive is really helpful.
Yeah. And I also think like having like a love affair with the audience, as weird as that sounds, is like a good, not to be like a steamroller or like an attention whore or whatever, but I think like I don't feel as good unless I have an audience, which I think is the point. Like
that's,
it should be bad. It shouldn't be as good with an audience because they're the key factor to performance, right?
Oh, that's
so it's like I think that really helped. Like the audience like helped teach me too, because it's nothing's truer than an audience response. So if they're not laughing, you're not funny. You know,
that's
true. Unless you can have terrible audiences, it is true. Like that audience was fucking cold and dead and tired. But, you know, 200 people aren't wrong.
That's true. Like if you're in a Herald and you're like, okay, I didn't love what we did in that first beat, but I got to bring it back and do it again.
Mm-hmm.
Find a way. How can I make the audience get on board? Is there any way, like, instead of just dragging it back, we got to do this again?
Yeah, that's what's really tough about the Herald, too. I think it's Delaney who says, who had a good quote about a bad first beat, and the students came out and did like the same bad second beat, and he said, "Why would you drag that fetid corpse back on stage?" So it's like just find the one idea.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the audience is not going to be mad. They're not going to be like, "That's not a true Herald."
Right.
They're going to be like, "Thank God."
Thank God they found a way to get out of that. Good for them.
Yeah, they had to sit through it.
Because we've all been there.
Yeah. Oh my God. Of course. And so I think it's just like find the fun part. And audience is like, especially with improv, an uneducated audience will laugh at cheap laughs because they don't know. But you can train, you can like that. You learn that on Turco like very easy. Like at first they'll laugh at swear words, but even by the end of your set, they're not laughing at swear words, and they'll laugh at dumb stuff. Like if you call out like, "Oh, you walked through the table." You know, like a shitty improv move.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there's a table there. You walk through it. That'll get a huge laugh. But they train themselves by the end of that show to not think that's funny.
That's so interesting.
So I will say an audience can be cheap, and it's not like be a whore to the audience, like a slave to them, because they can be wrong. But I do think it's just like 200 people laughing at something you said that isn't cheap is right. So do that. They are right. There are 200 of them.
And with Turco, you're playing huge crowds.
Yeah, you can play to... Yeah, I think one of the very first Turcos I ever did was at a museum in front of like 900 people, and we had Britney mics, and I think they were charged like $50 a ticket, and it
Whoa.
Was so fun, and I was like, Turco's fucking great, like like this is the best, and then you go play like, you know, to four people in a burger restaurant.
Right.
You're like, oh.
It's amazing. And aren't you guys up there for like an hour and a half or something?
It's supposed to be 90 minutes. It's generally not, because I am of the opinion that 90 minutes is too long.
That seems like a really long
time. It's too long to watch. And not even to perform, just to watch.
Yeah.
Like, I can perform for 90 minutes, but my God. Like, you're going to be... improv is... It's all about discovery, right? It's like shaped spontaneity. So you have to... After 90 minutes, you feel discovered.
You get it. You get me.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm sick of me too.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's cool. I feel like between The Beast, which is a relatively small space, and the things you do with Turco, you've had all this different experience in different sized theaters and different audiences. It's really great. Yeah.
Yeah, that'll teach you.
Yeah.
That'll whip you up.
That'll whip you up, as they say. So I feel like were you doing Turco when you were on Herald Night 2?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trico has changed how they did it now. It used to just be kind of, I think it was like you were just asked, and then there was a group of like, I'd say like 25 people that were just on.
Oh, okay.
And then they'd give you the schedule and who can do what shows. So you just go out with whoever in those 25. So yeah, I would do that on Herald Night while I was on Herald Night.
So that's like a big time commitment because you have Turco and Herald and Herald rehearsal. So that like improv was kind of your life then, right?
For sure. And Turco did not practice back then. Now they have rehearsals. Back then it did not. But yeah, it was like the weekends I would usually go do a Turco show, had Herald practice, had Herald Night, was on indie teams. You know,
were you happy?
Oh, yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, it sounds good.
I totally loved it. I could never do it now. But
just the pace of it?
Yeah, it's just, and it's so much. I love improv. I still love it, but I just do other, I like do other comedy as well now, which is super fun.
Yeah.
And I didn't, but improv like taught me how to do that comedy. I don't think one's better than the other. It's just what it is.
And before Rumpelteazer, had you done musical improv?
No.
Really?
So just in little goofy sets where it's like, there's a piano at Under St. Mark's, which is a venue. and so, like, all the teams that don't normally do musical improv would, you know. But no, Eric Gerson put that team together, and he put it together with people who are experienced musical improvisers and then people he thought would be good at musical improv who just never did it. Because I would have done it, but the classes, there just weren't that many.
Yeah, yeah.
Eliza Skinner moved, and then I think Amber Petty started, but not for a long time after. So there was a big lull kind of when I was coming up when there would be classes that they just didn't teach it. So I never learned. But then Eric, we did have rehearsals for that. That was the first time I'd rehearsed improv in so long. But I needed to like learn how to do it.
Yeah.
So that was really fun.
Yeah, it seems like, I mean, musical improv is so fun, and that team is so stacked with wonderful performers who are all so
funny.
Great and all have great voices.
What I love about musical improv is the thing I love about improv in that it just makes you commit.
Yeah.
You know, because it's so easy to detach. And the best improv is when they're just committing so hard to some idea. And it's just, nothing looks shittier in musical improv than when you're just phoning it in or not committed to some song. It's like you look like such an asshole.
Yeah.
So you have to commit so hard.
Yeah.
And that's something I love about improv in general is that, like, just throw yourself into the flames.
Throw yourself in. Yeah, it's totally true.
You have to do that with musical.
And the music's going to keep going whether you're doing it or not. You got to keep up. So.
And I've done some where, like, there have been some times where I'm like, oh, I'm not fully committed to this song, and you just feel terrible. It's like, oh, if I just would double down, this would get a lot better.
That's so true in just normal non-musical improv too,
Where
you're like, oh, I think if this person just did this but harder, it would they would be happier.
Well, 'cause that's the other thing is so much of comedy is, I guess, just like specificity because sometimes – because I never think about game anymore when I'm performing. You just are doing it. You know, it's more natural. And then if someone asked me after a show, what was the game of that scene, I would have no idea.
Right.
It was like, I was just like very mad about like these vegetables.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like, I guess like the game is too mad or, you know, but like it's just you're committing to an idea really hard.
Yeah.
And that makes it funny.
And having some emotional stake in it where you're like, you know, it's maybe funny how much I care, but like to the character, it's not funny.
Right.
They
care real hard.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So as a teacher, I know you teach different levels, but is there one sort of like lesson you see yourself consistently giving, like a big takeaway where you're like, oh, I keep giving people this piece of advice?
Oh my God, I'm sure there is. I haven't taught in like a month just because of this. I don't know when you're listening. I hate to date timestamp this.
I think it's going to be a while from now.
But this, while we're talking, is sort of freshly post-holidays.
Yes.
So I haven't taught in a while.
Yeah.
But I think the main thing, once I'd say with more advanced student, because in the beginning, I think everybody gives a lot of the same notes. It's like, you know, don't be jokey, da 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 da. But more advanced, it's kind of just like, it's what do you find funny? Like, why are you doing this? It has to, like, what do you find funny? What is the comedic idea you're playing? Mm-hmm. Why do you think it's funny? And now you have fun with it. Because I think I can't even remember who said this, but I thought it was smart. It's like, not a comedian, a good improviser, it's like you like them by how they and in yes and. Like, everybody yeses, but what is unique about each improviser is how they and.
That shade of who they are comes through.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, because you could be playing the same scene where it's like mother, daughter, you know, daughter wants to do this and she's the unusual character, but every improviser is going to be different as that daughter. And that's what's fun. So yeah. I think it's like, I guess in the more advanced levels, it's trying to get people to lean in to what they think is funny. Because it's like, I don't. After a while, it's like, I don't know what to tell you. You know, right. You know how to improvise. Now just make me laugh.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, be funny. Be
and don't
you.
Try to find, like, the right answer.
Yeah, there isn't
yeah,
one.
Yeah, exactly.
Because every scene can be bad and every scene can be good.
That's really good advice. I think that's helpful for anyone at any level.
Yeah.
Like, think about what you like about it. And you, in general, I see you as, like, a very joyful performer. Like, I think you would always be able to find, like, what's funny or what's fun or what do I like about it? Because otherwise, I mean, why do it?
Yeah, what are you doing?
What are you doing up there?
And it's like you're trying to make your scene partner look good. That whole adage, that chestnut, is very true. But it's like your scene partner's not going to look good unless you look good too.
Right.
You know, like be like bring what you think is funny and tell them.
Yeah.
In the scene, and they'll tell you, and then you're singing a song.
And then you're singing a song. Maybe even
literally.
Literally.
Maybe.
So you are a fan of organic and like not premise.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah. So what are some other types of ways you like to like start a scene? I mean, if you were to walk into a scene, would you want like a physicality? Or like, is there some cue you use?
Oh, yeah. I guess my favorite thing, like why I like that Spokane form or any like kind of mono scene form where you sort of live in a scene for a bit. I like hard gift giving and taking on a gift that someone else gave you. I love that. I love when people are like, you're this, you're that, dude. You know, I think that's so fun. I think it's so fun to not know something about your character and then someone tell. And that's is like making a justification just on the fly. It's fun. That's the joy of improv. It's like watching these people like, oh, I thought they were like this, but then, you know, they collect dogs.
And
or
like,
so, you
what
know?
A relief. When someone gives you something,
oh
you're like, oh, thank you. I don't have to think about it.
And all these old adages that are true. It's just show, don't tell. When someone's like, you collect dogs, it's just like, just start petting a fucking dog in your lap. Like, if you collect them, you definitely have one.
Yeah,
you know
exactly.
What I mean? And that now it's active and the audience is truly just going to laugh.
Yeah.
Start doing that.
That's so true.
And it's not, you didn't do anything.
You just did
someone,
the thing.
Yeah, they're like, you collect dogs, just be like, you don't even have to talk about it. You just start petting it.
I love that.
And then you can.
Yeah. And it's like also the way you pet it. Like there's so many choices you
can
make.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It informs.
And are there, so you prefer a mono scene too to like, would you prefer a mono scene like two-person scenes if you were to pick like, okay, I'm going to make a show. What would be like, oh, let's try this?
I really like those. First of all, I like the best, what am I even saying? I like when a scene, like I'm also on that team, fuck that shit.
Mm.
And we never discuss what form we're going to do.
Oh, wow.
We just go out and get the suggestion. And I love that too.
Because
it's
awesome.
Oh, sometimes it's a montage. Oh, sometimes it is a mono scene. Oh, sometimes it's one of those sort of macro scene-y where you're kind of following one character, then maybe that character goes away. So those are sort of my favorites. I remember, Nate Dern and I did a couple of two-person What I Did for Love shows just because everyone was out of town and we didn't, I think we waited too long to get sit-ins. but they were so fun because that's what we ended up doing for both halves. Even the interview premise-y were just these like rambling long scenes following these characters, sort of mono scenes, sort of macro scenes.
Oh,
I think that's my favorite thing.
That's cool because then you're not beholden to some form and if you want to do something, you just do it and it makes sense for the show. That's
really
cool.
I like finding forms on their feet a lot.
Yeah, that's really cool. And that also requires a lot of, again, like trust in the people you're with because they're going to do it too.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting. So if you're in a scene and you don't think it's going well, like what do you do?
I just leave the theater. I think the main thing always is like, I don't know. I think what I would always do is like have a strong reaction or confess something, even though that's like a pretty basic and dumb idea. But I think it's, this is from theater training, but like when you're watching a play, it's like the playwright wrote that play because this was an important time mm-hmm. for these characters. Like, something was happening, something important in these characters' lives. So that's what I think is true of improv, too. It's like we're watching yeah. the scene, like something interesting is happening. Maybe not important, because improv isn't, comedy isn't always about, like, important things. But something interesting is happening. So the easiest way to do that is to make the characters care. Mm-hmm. So if you confess something or have a strong reaction to something somebody says, at least then you don't have a comedic idea by any means, but you have something to latch onto. It's like, oh, this character cares that this character does this.
Yeah.
So now we have legs.
Yeah.
Now what's funny about these legs?
Yeah, exactly.
They walk backwards.
They walk backwards.
But the scene's like has something.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, okay, now we can rock.
That makes a lot of sense. I think, like, going back to the basics, it's so annoying when you're taking practice or you're in class. It's like, okay, we have to go back to the basics. But
right.
They're
always right.
They're always right. Exactly.
It is silly, but yeah.
Like, there's so many scenes where I'm like, oh, no, we just didn't establish a relationship. That's
yeah.
crazy.
Or, like, there was no environment, so this scene could have been hilarious in a church.
In a
but
church.
But we were just sort of in a white practice room.
We were standing so, with our arms
yeah,
next
yeah.
to our sides, not
right.
doing anything.
Just talking at each other.
Exactly.
So it's like, yeah.
Exactly. So you have a lot of improv going on. Are you doing other mm-hmm. comedy at the theater or like outside the theater too?
Yeah, I'm doing stuff. What am I doing at the theater? I think not a lot right now other than just, just shows.
Mm-hmm.
But I do stand up. I do, like, I write and stuff like that. So I have that going on outside of the theater. Do stand up a lot. And
where did your writing come from? Did you take classes or was that something that you
no,
started
so-
with comedy?
Yeah, I always wrote. I'd say the first thing I ever liked was writing. Mm. I know lots of kids do this. I'm not saying I was unique, but when I was a young child, before I was literate, I would draw a story and then go have my mom, and then I'd annotate. Wait, what was it? Is that the right word? I'd dictate
okay.
to my mother, and she would write the book.
Oh, wow.
I'd tell her what the story was
That's
and she'd
cool.
write the text. So I have lots of, you know, books at home that I wrote as a 5-year-old.
Wow.
And then I got really into the Goosebumps series by R.L. Stine.
Classic.
Classic. And so in 5th grade, we had to journal every day at the beginning of class. You know, I think it's just the teacher was tired and to get kids to practice penmanship or writing or something. So I, until I'd say like doing a bunch of comedy, didn't like talking about myself or writing about myself or thought that was really weird. So I just started like kind of paraphrasing an R.L. Stine Goosebumps book. And then because I'm a attention hog, when she'd ask anyone, okay, you want to read? I would read that story aloud like all year long. So there was like I was like writing a novel all year long and like serialized radio
and you were
reading
it.
To the class.
To the class,
yeah,
okay.
Because she's always been a performer, honey. So I would, like, read it aloud. And so that happened all year long. So I, like, wrote a book. It was horrible, but it was like a paraphrased Goosebumps book, the one I was reading when I started it. So I was into that. And then in high school, I'd, like, write like movies with my friends that were terrible. And then in college again, it's so weird. I went to college for theater, but then
yeah.
all my actual like passions died. like I didn't do comedy and I didn't write that much. Just because you're so, I went to a conservatory and you're just so busy. Like everybody always talks about their college, like reading and
yeah.
like laying on the grass and like getting into debates. And we had class freshman year more than the other years, but we would have class from like 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. every day. And then if you were in a play, you had rehearsals from 7 to 10.
Really?
And then you went and did your homework and then got drunk because it was college. And
right.
then just did it all again. So I had no free time.
Wow.
So I didn't write at all. And then when I got moved to New York and wasn't getting into any plays and then was just kind of coming up through the comedy scene, wrote a novel. And then so I did,
wow.
I did a lot of writing. And I still write.
Is the novel funny?
Yeah. I mean, it's less because it's like not a million jokes, but yeah, it's humorous.
It's humorous, yeah.
Yeah, and then that novel was really bad, and I tried to shop it around, and nothing really happened to that. And then I wrote most of another one, and then had to stop, and then I wrote another one. And then got into writing. I, like, met Josh Sharp. Who I write with a lot and perform with. We had a show that ran at the theater for a long time together, and we do this show outside of the theater that's like a variety show called A Gay Show for All People, where and that's more stand-up. Mm-hmm. And then the show we did was like a musical sketch show called Fucking Identical Twins. And so that's when I started writing like comedy more. And then after doing that Gay Show for All People a lot, we were doing two-man stand-up. And I never had any interest in doing stand-up and didn't think I would ever be good at it. But then we'd been doing that show for like 2 years, and then Josh was becoming a very successful stand-up, and I was like, oh, we do stand-up. So I just started doing it by myself. It's like, you've been writing stand-up for 2 years.
That's awesome.
But just with someone else.
That's crazy that you have so many different experiences. Like, you have the drama training, you've written novels. I mean, it's all, like, everywhere.
But it's just, it's like a, you just can't, I just have like a thing. I just like gotta.
I love that.
Gotta. Otherwise, I go cuckoo. And that's like why I started writing the novels, because I had no performance opportunities after performing all the time since I was like 8.
Oh yeah, that makes sense. I bet after leaving conservatory, yeah. It's like, well, wait, what?
And
am I
wasn't getting cast in anything, and I didn't really know. That's why UCB was helpful for me. I know it's sort of like another college or a grad school or whatever, but like, it was nice to be like. Get accepted into a theater and like put on a team and given a performance, because I didn't know, I was unaware of how to create my own performance opportunities at that point.
Right.
Like there's lots of people like your Joe Firestones
who will just, out of nothing create a thing. Yeah.
I didn't know how to do that. Right. I could never have even considered calling a space and booking a show.
Yeah, that's the first thing that would hold me up is like the phone.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Or like email would be like, well, how do you get their emails? Am I bothering them?
Yeah,
like,
I'm sorry.
And now I get that it just doesn't fucking matter. But then I had no idea how to do that. And then it came from too, like a drama or like a musical theater background. So I could have put on a cabaret. I understood, but I had no interest in doing that. Right. I didn't want to just like sing songs.
And you meet the right people too. Like Josh was someone where you're like, okay, we click and we can work together, which is great too.
Because I hadn't found, I'd written with other people, but I never found writing partners that were as easy to write with as it was for me to write alone. And then with Josh, it was like, oh, this person is as easy to write with as it is to write alone. So that's why it worked, I think.
And he's a great improviser too. So when you write, do you use improv at all?
Our writing style is weird because I have other people that I've written with where you kind of write a pass, then you email it to them, they write a pass. We just have to be together. And we don't like improvise scenes. It's not like we're like, oh, what would be, but it's just sort of just back and forth dialogue. And sometimes you take the computer and you're like, hold on, I have it. And you write for like 10 lines and then you make them read it. And then you do sort of do it. But it has to be in the room. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. It's just our styles. Like you got to be together or like, you know, via FaceTime.
Yeah.
To timestamp this again.
To timestamp. FaceTime. Whoa. Oh my God.
Well, in 10 years, that'll be ridiculous.
That's true. You know? I mean, that's very true. Like by then, who knows?
Instant met, like no one would say AIM anymore.
Oh, I would. What? I'm still Fatima 109, the Backstreet Boys choreographer in AJ McLean's birthday. No.
Oh my God.
What
I
was
love
your
that.
Screen name?
I honestly can't remember. I had embarrassing screen names. I can't remember my AIM one. What was it?
I'm sure it was good. Everyone's is good. That's just a rule.
My my really gay friend, his was, so IMDb is Internet Movie Database. There is something called IBDB, which is Internet Broadway Database, and his was IBDB Puppy, which is
Puppy,
the gayest, like most horrible, foul
Surprised
thing.
Surprised you got it. It's
IBDB
you know.
Puppy.
You should have got that on every platform forever. That's so good.
I really hate it.
You know, it's like, honestly, IBDB Poppy. It's so good. I feel like I've brought this off the rails, but I'm happy where
now
we
you
went.
Gotta.
You gotta.
You gotta go off the rails.
So, you know, this has been such an illuminating, wonderful conversation.
Oh, my God.
Are there other pieces of advice or big takeaways if you were like, listen, I'm on this podcast. I got a platform.
Finally, I have a voice.
Finally, I can, instead of tweeting, instead of putting it out there on Facebook, I can say it.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess my comedy advice in general is sort of, it is just do it all. And I think even you think, oh, I'd be bad at that, or that's not. Whatever, like, I'm not into stand-up, I'm not into sketch, I'm not into improv. I would say do it all. They all have helped me with the other ones.
That's great advice.
Know? And I think, like, in this modern landscape of content creators, I think you just have to be good at everything.
Yeah.
To get noticed. I mean, I think you just have to be good at everything. And so I stand-up was this thing that I never thought I could do and just didn't have any interest in. And then because I'd done improv so long, it was shocking. Of course I was bad at it when I started, but you get good so much faster than you got good at improv because you already are good at comedy.
And you can trust yourself on stage.
Right, and you know your voice.
Right.
Like, already, because that's what improv's great for, too. It teaches you your comedic sensibility. So you already, you know, you're going to go up and you're going to do a joke that you think is funny and it's going to bomb, but you're used to bombing, too. That's
right.
I was comfortable with bombing because I had so much. So it was like,
really
okay,
true.
Sure, you know, yeah, that joke's bad. I hear you.
Yeah.
And then so I just got better at that so much faster, and writing helps stand up, and writing helps improv, and improv, of course, helps writing. So I just think do it all.
That's really great
advice.
Be a
little piggy.
Oh, I love that. That's the takeaway. I think that's great. I also think, like, in terms of improv, all that stuff is made better by the other things you do. Like,
yeah.
It just, that makes total sense. So, Erin, if people want to follow up, find you, where do they go? What's a Twitter handle? IBDBpuppy.
My Twitter handle, I wish I could change. Can you change your Twitter handle?
Yeah.
Oh, you can? Just like Instagram?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, now.
Well, then it's going to change.
Right now it's Erin Jackson 85.
Oh.
Which I don't like.
Could you be like an Erin Jackson? That's taken.
You can't just be Erin Jackson.
That's gone.
I'm
okay.
Sure, that's gone. And then on Instagram, I'm Garbage Troll. And that's what I want to be. I want to be known as that across all internet platforms.
I feel like you could claim that.
But I feel like maybe someone has already taken it on Twitter.
Okay.
But maybe not.
Maybe not.
I got it on Insta.
That's true.
Not
I mean,
Garbage Troll 1. I'm Garbage Troll.
Garbage Troll 85.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. This has been awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much
for this
conversation. And that was a long form conversation. Next episode's going to be in LA. So I don't know who the host or the guest is going to be.
Is
that crazy? I know. It's really exciting. But I've been Janie Stoller, and I want to thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great day.
You've been listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at ucbtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.